All right, well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We'll go ahead and get started. We are missing a few post-council members. Chief Carpenter had a conflict with court, so he's been excused. Commissioner Gibson is running late. I assume the same for Sheriff Edmonds, Chief Burbank, and Dr. Checkett, so we'll bring them up to speed when they get here. At this time, I'd like to have the minutes from the September 24th meeting approved. We can get a motion. Thank you, Mr. Austin. We have a okay. Second by Sheriff Tracy. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, great. Turn the time over to Lieutenants Acosta and Brewer now for quarterly reports.
Good morning, council members, distinguished guests. Just to give you a quick report on what has happened since our last council meeting, we have received a total of 22 complaints received in the investigations office. Of those, all 22 were open, and an additional one, for a total of 23, were opened from a previous complaint that we hadn't received all the data on. We have conducted one administrative hearing. We have closed five cases with no action. We have had five voluntary relinquishments. Of the five voluntary relinquishments, two have been sex on duty. One has been a BCI violation, one falsifying government records, and one lying under Garrity. We have a total of 162 background investigations that we've conducted. We have 64 active investigations with a total of 109 investigations that we're still looking at in some stage of investigation. Any questions for the Investigations Bureau? All righty. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lieutenant Acosta. Lieutenant Brewer?
Okay, so for the Post-Counseling Training Bureau report, we have 310 is currently in session, and they are scheduled to graduate on December 18th with 26 cadets. They started back in October of this year, so this third quarter. 311 started on November 3rd with 24 cadets, and they are scheduled to graduate February 26th. So this class is actually going to be training during the holidays this year. With 18 troopers in that class, so it's a very large class with the Highway Patrol as well as other agencies. We added that class because the need was there. In the in-service training, at the end of September, since the end of September, we've offered 27 in-service training classes, training 473 officers and 25 dispatchers for a total of 444 hours of in-service training. So this quarter has actually been a little bit busier than last quarter. Traditionally, that last quarter is not as busy due to the fact the training year has just ended. So now you can see our numbers are just ramped up for the in-service training. Any questions regarding the hours or classes that we have in session before I move on to the next?
If I can add something, as a point of interest to the council, since 2010, the workload across the board investigations, in-service and basic training has increased 30%. And our budget has decreased.
Just something for you to chew on.
We'll bring that up to the commissioners.
We're going
to
take out a hat and pass it around.
Yeah, I take quarters.
Chairman, it's okay to move on to the next, satellite training audits. So we performed two Satellite Academy audits this quarter, one at Dixie State University, and just a side note, they do have a class in session right now. They're training 13. They may have lost one. I think that's coming down the pipe. Also, they have moved their training to the Dixie Applied Technology Center, which is up on top where the old airport is, and that building's been re-renovated and remodeled, and it's beautiful. We went down there and taught Captain Sparks and I a couple weeks ago, and it's a very nice training facility. They are still going to be administered under the Dixie State University, though, as well, and not switching over to the Dixie Applied Technology Center. I don't understand the relationship, but DATC wants them there, but they'll still stay with Dixie State University. And then the second, forgot to say that there were no exceptions to this audit. We were able to spend some time down there with Chief Flowers, who is the director of the Dixie Satellite, and they're doing a good job. So Utah Valley University, we performed an audit on their academy last week. Sergeants Alex Garcia and Sergeants Barry Watkins performed that audit. They currently do not have a class in session right now. They're scheduled to start at the first of the year with another law enforcement training block. And there are no exceptions to that audit as well. They're doing a good job down there at Utah Valley University. Any questions regarding the audits or the audit process? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Wade. Okay, our next item agenda is the committee report on URS retirement eligibility that was brought up by Millard County Sheriff last year, or last meeting, excuse me. We'll have Mr. Bolander present.
Yes, good morning. If you recall, this council heard a dispute between Millard County Sheriff's Office and Utah Retirement Systems about two positions, whether they would be eligible for coverage in the public safety retirement system. The council at its last meeting decided to appoint a subcommittee to look into it with more detail and come back with a recommendation to the council. That subcommittee met last month, and we have a recommendation. While I can't speak for URS or Millard County Sheriff's Office, my understanding is this may become moot as Millard County will most likely resubmit those positions with the necessary language to make them eligible for coverage. However, based on the two job position descriptions as of right now, the subcommittee's recommendation is that neither position should be granted coverage. And the reason for that, if you refer to the memorandum in your packet, the requirements in statute. Basically, there's five elements that a position needs to meet to be eligible for coverage. And the subcommittee determined that these two positions, again, as submitted right now, failed to meet the criteria in B-I and B, B-1 and B-2. And the key words there is primarily. And again, that goes back to the issue, if these job descriptions were modified, then they would be eligible. But based on what we have right now, that is the subcommittee's recommendation.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Bolander? Okay, I'll bring it back to the council for our discussion, and I believe we'd need a motion on this. Sheriff Tracy?
I can make the motion that we support, I guess we didn't support the letter or approve the letter, or are we actually approving the, which part of the motion on.
Well, if we approve the decision by the committee, then the two positions will not be under the public safety retirement. If we support the sheriff's, or Millard County Sheriff's Office position, they would be. So, okay.
I would make the motion then that we not approve them as outlined in the memorandum, that they not be considered for the public safety retirement at this time. Mm-hmm. As a point of discussion, as part of that subcommittee, I sent an email to Sheriff Decker with the alternate that was discussed back in last meeting that did qualify, and they were looking at not just changing, they would change the job to fit the new description that was required to put that person under and give him the duties that would require him to actually be eligible for the URS retirement.
Great.
I'll second it.
Any other discussion on this? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. passes. Next, we'll turn the time over to Director Stevenson for a report on training hours and the audit. And then legislative items, Scott, just go ahead and go there. And then state accreditation, if you would.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Council. To report on the in-service training hour audit that we conduct annually, August 1, we sent out a suspension letter for those officers who were deficient. For those in the room that do not know what this audit is regarding, it's regarding the 40-hour in-service training requirement for continuing education for officers to maintain their certification or license, if you will, to work as a peace officer within the state of Utah. We audit every officer, which are about 9,000 officers statewide, to make sure that they're meeting that statutory obligation. In August 1, we found that 103 officers were deficient and 103 suspension letters were sent out. As of October 1, so we give them a couple months to reconcile and make up the hours before we report to URS, which is Utah Retirement Systems. And on October 1, we reported 23 officers to the Utah Retirement System that are still deficient to this day. So, any questions about the audit? Okay. If you guys recall, last year I had Representative Greenwood run a bill that would add a sanction to the reporting statute. There is a statute that requires chief administrators to report to post any officer that is in violation of 536211, which is the post statute. That was met with some resistance. However, most of the administrators I spoke with agreed with it. But there were some holes and questions that I wanted to answer, and I had Representative Greenwood withdraw the bill for further dialogue and discussion. After speaking with Commissioner Squires and a few other administrators, I am proposing to this council, and what I'm asking for is a vote as to a direction or a course of action you would like me to take. There is the legislative route, which I have two drafts that include a Class C misdemeanor as the ultimate sanction if somebody fails to report within 90 days. And then there is a progressive bill that if they failed to report, then they are required to come before the council, this body, and explain why the case was not referred to post. No action to be taken, just merely come before their peers and explain why they did not report. And then if they fail to come before the council, then there would be a progressive sanction of a Class C misdemeanor. However, I feel more comfortable if we could handle this by administrative rule. I've been working with Marcus Yockey, our AG rep, and it does give me gives me a lot of authority to create administrative rule with advice from the council. And we have drafted some language that we feel we can handle within administrative rule, and that would require that chief administrator to come before this body and explain why they did not report the case to post. So I'm asking for a vote of direction, I guess. Is it the legislative route or the administrative route? I think administratively would be more, I don't want to say easier, but it would give us a good barometer of what we are looking at as far as not reporting. But it adds more teeth to the current statute. And if we do see a problem, then maybe we can progress in the future to a statutory remedy. So those are my thoughts and opinions of a course of action, but ultimately I will do with this body.
So, Scott, under the administrative rule, is there still the Class C misdemeanor?
No.
So no. What sanction would you be able to take if an administrator simply refused to come to the post council and explain?
With this approach, there would be none. But I believe most of them, if not all of them, would come before this body. We're talking about very few cases. We're just trying to tie up a loose end and show the public that we are accountable at every level of law enforcement.
And then for clarification, the 90-day reporting is just to require the administrator to report an action that they may believe is in violation of the section. It doesn't require the department to have completed their IA investigation, which is a totally separate matter, correct?
The way it reads is if they find it to be true, then they have to report it. So if it takes, You know, some departments don't have an extensive staff. Therefore, it may take them longer to progress through an investigation such as this. Then once it's verified that it did in fact occur, then they have 90 days to report it to us.
Okay, but haven't we had some incidences in the past where some IAs have taken significantly longer?
Yes.
That could literally drag out well beyond a year?
Yes.
So it would be 90 days from the end of when that is finally. So you could be talking 2 or 3 years if somebody wants to dry. I mean, I can't understand why you would want to, but, oh, sorry. But that possibility exists for that to take that long.
Feasibly. At the conclusion of an investigation, that's when they would be required to report it to us.
Okay. Okay, well, is there any discussion from other members of the Pulse Council on this? I somewhat see a problem with that. I think that gives an out for somebody. Not that I think that it would happen, as you pointed out, very often, but the potential does exist that it could happen.
Yes. The circumstance that you explained, I believe, would be an anomaly.
Right, but it has happened. So,
yes.
And usually it's a high-profile case where it does happen, where transparency is being called into question anyway. Sheriff Edmonds.
Just for clarification, Director, if an agency is conducting an internal affairs investigation and that investigation is not concluded because the subject or the target of the investigation resigned, for instance, and therefore the investigation then stopped, those still don't need to be reported, or they do?
No, they would. I mean, just because you don't finish an investigation doesn't mean that you haven't verified that it has happened. You may not have been able to interview everybody, but let me explain to you what happens 95% of the time. An administrator contacts me and talks to me about what the possibilities or the outcome of this circumstance may be. So I work closely with a lot of you to work through some of these cases. We could tie in language that would address your concern that if they just don't complete the investigation, that the case drops. Again, this is a working document, and that's why I'm bringing it before this body, but I do understand your concern if that is the case.
Yeah, it is a concern. If we could address that in the administrative language, I think that would be helpful.
And what I will do, depending on the direction I am given, I'll send out this document to this body and receive feedback, and then I'd like to send it to the Chiefs Association and the Sheriff's Association for feedback as well before any action is taken.
Any other questions for Director Stevenson? Any further discussion on this matter? Anybody care to make a motion as to which direction they would like Director Stevenson to proceed on this, either administrative rule or legislatively?
I don't mind making a motion.
Thank you, Sheriff Edmonds.
I'm happy to support the director in his desire to want to take this an administrative route, as long as he can make sure that he consults very closely with this body concerning some of the issues that we may or may not have. I'd be willing to make the motion that we go ahead and move towards an administrative remedy to this issue.
All right. We have a motion to move to an administrative remedy. Well, any discussion or questions of the sheriff of his motion? No? Okay. John, you second? Okay. Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes.
Thank you. Next point of discussion is this a state accreditation process, and Frank Budd is well aware of the attempt to create a state accreditation, and this is similar to CALEA, but I think it's a good point of discussion, especially in light of what's going on nationwide, just as a proactive measure or discussion. But I would, at this time, I'd like to ask Frank, sorry to put you on the spot, sir, but explain. You bet. I'm just flying. Just give us an idea of what was attempted, and then we can start from there.
Currently the Utah Chiefs of Police Association does have an accreditation
program. Candidly, we have not had many agencies apply. I have one right now that has indicated they are finishing up the process for application. We have a number of standards, several hundred standards actually. Some apply, some do not apply. For example, if you don't have a jail, then those standards are non-applicable. If you don't have motor officers, those, but generally speaking, they cover just about every area. The standards cover just about every area of law enforcement, administration, operation. We do not tell an agency what their policy needs to say. We do say you need to have a policy. For example, you know, use of force and pursuits and those kinds of things that draw a lot of public attention. We don't tell you this is what you have to do, but you have to have a policy for it. And frankly, as we go out and do the accreditation visits, I'm going to say forces because it's voluntary to apply for it, but it basically forces an agency to review all of their policies and make certain that their policies are up to standard and timely and these kinds of things. As I've gone out, I'm generally one of those who goes out to make a final a visit, and you know, we find things like insurances that have lapsed and things, you know, it's not minor if you have a problem, but things like that. And but for the most part, most agencies have brought all their standards, their policies up to meet those standards. And I think it's a good program. It's just that we don't have many agencies that have volunteered at this point.
How many?
Oh, half a dozen or so. Yeah.
Question is, are you using a vendor or did you develop your own for the state?
The association developed its own prior to my coming on as director, using a number of other states that have their individual state accreditation. And frankly, our association needs to revise our standards and go back. I've gone through them, and for the most part, they're still in line, but we need to do some of that. I haven't pushed the envelope because we have maybe one agency a year that indicates an interest in doing this. It's quite a big job. It's usually assigned to an officer, usually at the lieutenant level or above, and it takes them about a year to get their get their stuff pulled together.
But it's not as costly as CLIA.
It's not costly at all. Basically, we charge we ask a fee of about $300 now. And part of that goes for a nice plaque that we give them when they complete that. So all the work we do is basically have agencies that help and they volunteer. So we don't charge essentially for that.
Do you feel like that is the body in which this agenda should be driven?
Well, right now it's the only body that. If you're saying, should it be at the state level
or
post level, we haven't discussed that, but I suppose it could be there. I think most of the states that have their individual state accreditations, it works back through the association.
Okay.
And I have had inquiries from a few sheriff's departments, and we'd be happy to, you know, it's not just for the police. We could do sheriffs. But they have their own standards for accreditation for their jails. That's the difference.
I just want to bring this up as a point of discussion so that we are proactive. We've had a few incidents that have drawn national attention, but for the most part, our officers do a great job, and we just need to stay ahead of that issue. So I just appreciate the discussion.
One other thing, many of our agencies now subscribe to Lexapro, and mm-hmm. and they pretty well keep their policies up, and I think it's made it easier for agencies to meet the accreditation, our Utah accreditation standards, because of that program they're in. And if they need a policy, they go back to Lexapro and they'll get that policy. So it's easier for us to audit that.
What about some of the smaller agencies throughout the state that can't afford Lexapro or even CLIA for that matter?
Well, we don't require any of that. If they want to put someone on their policies, it's just that I think most agencies find that if they don't have some kind of a system to keep their policies updated, it's really tough to keep those policies updated.
Sure.
It's not the highest priority for every agency all the time.
Anything else?
Sure. Just on the sheriff's side, the Utah Association of Counties has a insurance pool that has been working with smaller counties, and those that can't afford that, they will offset part or all of that pay to develop and implement the Lexapro. And then whether they go for further accreditation, that's up to them. So at least the standards and in having policies hopefully will be done pretty soon throughout the state, even in the smallest agencies. As far as sheriffs, we're working towards working all of those 29 counties into it.
If we had an agency that called us and said we can't afford some kind of a vendor to help with our policies, would you help us? We would.
Awesome.
We'd help.
And hopefully
that's being thrown out there as common knowledge, as a resource for these departments.
If they find us, you know, we just really haven't had a lot of takers on it.
So it would be nice if we could put some information on our post portal and a link to contact you.
I think we have it on our webpage, but that'd be fine. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Anything else for me?
Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Disciplinary case review. We'll have Mr. Yonke from the Attorney General's office present.
Good morning, counsel. We'll just jump right into it. The first matter before the council is the certification of Troy Anderson. He was not employed at the time of the incident. Sustained allegations are driving under the influence, which falls under Category D of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a 2.5-year suspension, and that's based on the high blood alcohol content and previous post-suspension at the time of the arrest. A summary of the facts are as follows. On May 13, 2013, Troy Anderson was involved in a single vehicle crash and was subsequently arrested for DUI. At the time of his arrest, Anderson's peace officer certification was suspended for a previous DUI, which was scheduled to end on July 8, 2013. Anderson's BAC at the time, or blood alcohol content at the time of the arrest, was 0.22 grams per 100 milliliters of blood. Anderson entered into a guilty plea to the amended charge of impaired driving, a Class B misdemeanor. During a post-Garrity interview, Anderson stated he could not remember the day of the crash, but said he most likely consumed the alcohol found in his system just prior to the crash. On November 1st, 2014, Anderson waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Any questions on this case? Okay, move it for a motion. I'm sorry. Mr. Rosen, I didn't know you were here for that case. I apologize.
I appreciate you taking a few minutes or allowing me to take a few minutes of your time. I realize you guys are extremely busy. I just wanted to state that a couple of points of clarification as to me not remembering the crash. I had what was called a traumatic brain injury. I sustained serious injury. I tried to maintain a level of cooperation throughout the entire incident. Secondly, the other thing that I wanted to address was I'm not necessarily lying to myself. I think it was more a matter of being naive to myself. I had stated that I didn't feel like I was an alcoholic, that I had just made a bad choice. Through lots of classes some meetings, I've discovered that there's different types of alcoholism. And the level where I would fall into would be considered like a binge drinking alcoholic, meaning I don't wake up every day, I don't drink daily, never have, never will. But I fall into a second category, which is oftentimes when I start to drink, I don't know when is enough, when is when, and I have lapses in judgment. i.e. getting on a motorcycle when I'd been impaired. So I just wanted to address those two issues, I want you to know that I'm taking full responsibility. I have no excuses. I'm not trying to stand before you and make any excuses. I just wanted to clarify those two points. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Chair, members of the council, I'm Brett Rawson for respondent. We do not object to or dispute the post recommendation. Ask that you vote to sustain it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nothing further from
us. Now we'll bring it back to the council for discussion and a motion.
Motion that we accept the recommendation.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Second.
Thank you, Doctor. Okay, we have a motion to accept and second. Is there any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Talisha Black, former member of the Tooele City Police Department. Sustained allegations are assault and domestic violence in the presence of a child, which falls under Category C of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a two-year suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. On April 15, 2014, Talisha Black and her sister were engaged in an argument. During the argument, Black punched her sister in the head with a closed fist. Black's three-year-old son was present during the altercation. Law enforcement responded and conducted an investigation. At the conclusion of that investigation, the case was screened with the Tooele City attorney, who declined to prosecute the matter. On April 17, 2014, Black's probationary employment with Tooele City was terminated. Then on August 5, 2014, Post conducted a Garrity interview with Ms. Black. During the interview, Black admitted to punching her sister one time after her sister had punched her. Black said her three-year-old son was present at the time of the altercation. On November 17, 2014, Black waived her right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you. Is Ms. Black or a representative here today that'd like to address the council? All right, there is a letter in your packet regarding this incident. Council, take the time to peruse that. It looks like everybody's had a chance to review that, so time for a motion, or if there's further discussion.
I'd make a motion that we accept Post recommendation of the two-year suspension.
Thank you, Sheriff Tracy. Do we have a second?
A second.
Thank you, Director Cook. Pauls?
I asked
him. I learned from the first time. All right, we have a motion to accept and a second. All in favor, say aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Jacob Bamey, currently a member of the Logan City Police Department. Sustained allegation is disorderly conduct and a BCI violation, which falls under Category E and F of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a nine-month suspension based on the two separate violations. A summary of the facts are as follows. On September 23, 2012, Jacob R. Bamey was investigated by a local police agency for disorderly conduct. Bamey and his estranged wife were involved in a verbal argument in front of the yard of a residence.
Bamey's wife contacted the local police and asked them to respond to the residents. Bamey admitted to the investigating officer the verbal argument was loud and involved both he and his wife screaming obscenities. Bamey and his wife were charged with disorderly conduct, a Class C misdemeanor. Bamey later entered a guilty plea, which was held in abeyance, to the charge of disorderly conduct. During the internal investigation, it was also discovered Bamey had accessed BCI information for personal reasons. On October 11, 2014, Jacob Bamey waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Okay, Representative, yes, Mr. Rawson.
Very good.
Chair, members of the council, I am Brett Rawson for respondent. We only have one request in this case, and that is that where we have two allegations, one being the BCI allegation that we do not dispute, but the other being this allegation of disorderly conduct. It's true that my client did not go to a trial on that allegation. He felt that he did not wish to put the agency in a poor light or his family, and he took what you know as a plea in abeyance. Our request for this body is that you detract slightly from the post recommendation of 9 months and you let these sanctions run concurrent such that the 6 months and the 3 months run together so that his entire length of sanction would be 6 months. And we'll stand for questions.
Okay. Any questions from the council? Okay, thank you, Mr. Rawson. Mr. Yaki, do you have a...
Just a brief rebuttal. In regards to post, we feel that the nine-month suspension is sufficient. These are two separate incidents. They did not occur at the same time. And so that's why post is sticking with the nine-month suspension.
Thank you. Okay, we have a request to run consecutively. I'm sorry, concurrent. Do we have a motion from the council?
I'll make the motion that we accept the 6 months for the category E.
Okay, well, the recommendation is 9 months, so you want to change it to 6 months?
So I'm sorry, I'd like to amend it to 6 months.
Okay, thank you.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion to amend the nine-month suspension to a six-month suspension, and it's been seconded. Do we have any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll bring it to a vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
One opposed? Okay, motion carries.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Charles Crosby, former member of the Cedar City Police Department. Sustained allegation is sex on duty, which falls under Category B of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a three-year suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. On March 27, 2014, Charles S. Crosby was administratively investigated by the Cedar City Police Department for engaging in sexual conduct while on duty. On April 4th, 2014, during an administrative Garrity interview conducted by the Cedar City Police Department, Crosby admitted to having sexual intercourse with a female while he was on duty. On July 29th, 2014, during a post-Garrity interview, Crosby admitted to engaging in sexual intercourse while he was on duty and in uniform. On October 24th, 2014, Charles Crosby waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Yaki. Is Mr. Crosby our representative here today? Okay. Don't see anybody, so we'll bring it back to council for a motion or discussion. Thank you, Colonel.
Second.
Second by Chief Stratton. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
The next matter before the council is a certification of Justin L. Curtis. He is a former member of the Cache County Sheriff's Department. Sustained allegations are theft by deception, which falls under Category D of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a one-year suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. During September 2007, while attending a police academy qualification shoot, Justin L. Curtis took a case of 40 caliber ammunition that was left over after the final shoot. During the summer of 2011, Curtis was attending department-sponsored firearms training, and as a range master, Curtis was in charge of bringing ammunition to the range and then returning the unused ammunition to the department armory. At the conclusion of the training, a box of 1,000 rounds of .223 rifle ammunition fell behind some plastic totes in the trunk of Curtis's patrol vehicle. Later, while cleaning his vehicle, he found the case of ammunition placed in a conspicuous location in his garage to remind him to take it back to the armory. And in the fall of 2013, Curtis, being short on money, took both cases to a local pawn shop and sold the ammunition. Some of the boxes had markings from the police academy, and the pawn shop owner contacted the local police department. Curtis participated in his agency's internal investigation as well as a criminal investigation by another agency. Curtis was subsequently charged with 2 counts of theft by deception. Curtis later entered into a guilty plea to 1 count of theft by deception, and the second count was dismissed. On February 5th, 2014, during a post-Garrity interview, Curtis admitted to the theft of the ammunition in 2011, but claimed the ammunition he took in 2007 while at the academy was given to the cadets by the staff. On September 11th, 2014, Justin Curtis waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Yonke. Is Mr. Curtis or a representative of Mr. Curtis here today? No? Okay. Any discussion on this case?
I'll make a motion to accept.
We have a motion to accept. I just have to throw in here. I'm sorry, I don't think a one-year suspension is adequate in this. You take a case of ammunition down to a pawn shop. If every officer did that fell upon hard economic times, we'd be visiting pawn shops a lot. And I think a one-year suspension for this is just totally inadequate. That being said, I cannot make a motion, but we do have a motion to accept by Sheriff Smith. Do we have a second? Mr. Gibson? Okay. All in favor of accepting a one-year suspension, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Nay.
Okay, we're going to have to do a raise of the hands again. All in favor, raise your hand. Okay, those opposed? Okay, the motion fails. So at this time...
I would make a substitute motion, Mr. Chairman, to raise the suspension to 2 years. I understand from guidelines it can be anywhere from 3 months to 2.5 years.
That's correct.
I think 2 years would be more adequate. I agree with your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Osmer.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Director Cook. Is there any discussion on that? Okay. We have a motion and a second for a 2-year suspension. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? 2-year suspension carries.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Brandon G. Doan. Mr. Doan was not employed at the time of the incident. Sustained allegation is falsifying information to obtain post-certification, which falls under Category C of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a 2-year suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. On June 9th, 2014, Brandon Doan, a cadet at a satellite academy, submitted an email to post disclosing his previous illegal use of prescription medication, which occurred in 2007. This information was not on Doan's post application dated September 18, 2013, nor was it included in his verification of information on application form dated October 16, 2013. On June 10, 2014, Post conducted a Garrity interview with Doan, in which he admitted that he intentionally omitted his illegal use of prescription medication. Doan was concerned that the information would keep him from being admitted into the academy. On October 22, 2014, Doan waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you, Mr. Yockey. Is Mr. Doan or a representative of Mr. Doan here? Would you like to address the council, sir?
I'd like to thank the council for their time, and I'm sorry that this happened. What happened was 5 years ago, more than 5 years ago, I hurt my back and was on pain medication for the back injury. A coworker offered his pain medications because he no longer wanted them and gave them willingly to me, which I accepted. There was no exchange, and I did not feel at the time that it was unlawful. When I applied for the police academy, I did not feel that I had broken any laws, and then upon a background investigation with Salt Lake County Sheriff's, it became apparent that yes, I had, at which time I notified Post of my actions. I have not concealed this information. I'm not trying to deceive anyone. It was just that I didn't know that I had broke the law.
Okay.
Thank
you. Any questions for Mr. Doan?
I have one. On the report here, it says that intentionally omitted using his use of hydrocodone. Did you not put the use of it at all on the application, or was it that you had used it but you didn't admit to the fact you'd used somebody else's additionally?
I had a prescription for it, and so it was the same prescription that was given to me. I was just upping the dose because I was in too much pain at the time.
On your application, did you admit that you had used anything? There was no reference to any hydrocodone at all on there, right?
The prescription was wood because it had been 5 years or more.
Okay.
Any other questions? Mr. Yockey?
Nothing in rebuttal.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mr. Doan.
What I am here for is just to ask that there be some leniency in the amount of time that I am suspended on my license. Or if you could just suspend my LEO certification so I can keep my BCO and SFO certification so I can still apply for jobs. I have been under investigation for 6 months now and been unable to apply for jobs at that time. I want to get a job in law enforcement, and it is a career path that I've always wanted to do. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
And just for clarification for the council, when it contains all post certifications when we suspend, not simply an LEO or a BCO. But it would be an all post certification.
All right. Okay. Director or Dr. Budd?
Did you complete the academy?
When I went through under Garrity, I was notified three actions could take place: that I could be removed from the police academy, there was a possibility that I would not be allowed to take the final test, or that they would take my certification. I continued through the police academy waiting for that decision to happen. I was also notified that I could go before the council in September, but because you guys were down in St. George, I was unable to at that time.
So, but you went ahead and completed?
I did complete, yes.
Great, any other questions? Back to the council for a motion.
I move we accept the recommendations.
Second
by Sheriff Edmonds. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Doan.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Sean Hartley. He was not employed at the time of the incident. The sustained allegation is falsifying information to obtain post certification, which falls under Category C of the post disciplinary guidelines. Post recommended disciplinary action is 2 year suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. On November 10th, 2013, Sean Hartley submitted an application for training and certification with Post. On January 8, 2014, Hartley signed a verification of application information form but failed to disclose that he used marijuana in December of 2013.
After graduating from the academy, Hartley contacted Post and reported his use of marijuana. During a Post-Garrity interview, Hartley admitted to using marijuana in December of 2013 and also omitting the usage from his application addendum in January 2014. On November 17, 2014, Hartley waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Yockey? No. Okay, is Mr. Hartley here today? A representative for Mr. Hartley? No. Okay, bring it back to the council for a motion.
I move to accept Post recommendation of 2 year suspension.
Thank you, Chief Stratton. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Your choice, Shauna. You got three or one. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Your motion carries.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Wendy Horlocker. I apologize if I, Horlocker is what I have. Currently employed with the Utah Department of Corrections and Adult Probation and Parole. Sustained allegation is gambling, which falls under Category E of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a letter of caution, and this is based on the nature of the offense and the disclosure of the offense by the officer. A summary of the facts are as follows. On or about January 21st, 2014 through February 2nd, 2014, Wendy Horlocker organized a betting pool for the Super Bowl. Horlocker used her state email account to distribute information about the betting pool to those participating. On March 7th, 2014, Horlocker received information from a third party that a department employee alleged Horlocker was abusing her state email account for the betting pool. Horlocker reported the allegation to her supervisor and made a full disclosure of her conduct. An internal investigation was subsequently conducted and resulted in Horlocker receiving a day off without pay. In Garrity interviews with both her department and Post, Horlocker admitted to organizing and participating in the betting pool as well as using her state email account to distribute the information. On November 18, 2014, Horlocker waived her right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Any questions for Mr. Yockey? Is Ms. Horlocker here or a representative like to address the council?
Thank you. I just want to state that I did participate in this gambling pool. It was a Super Bowl pool. And then I later received information that one of my staff members had received a copy of this. Don't know how, but he was going to use it against me as blackmail if I ever tried to hold him accountable. So luckily I was doing training with my supervisor at that time and notified her of the incident and took full responsibility and I beg for the Post's forgiveness.
Okay, thank you.
Just for Post Council's knowledge, there is a letter in the packet from a chief.
Want to take a moment to review the letter at the end of this packet. It looks like we've all reviewed it. Director Cook, did you want to say something?
Well, I need to recuse myself.
Right. Thank you. All right. Bring it back to council now for a motion.
Motion to accept the recommendation.
Thank you, Colonel Fuhrer.
I was going to make a substitute recommendation, Mr. Chairman, beforehand.
Okay. Do we have to? Yeah, we can do that now. We don't have to vote on the first motion. All right. Thank you, Mr. Austin.
This one bothered me quite a bit as I read through it. I think this is something that everybody gets engaged in at one time or another. And it seems to me that her real crime here is perhaps using the state email system inappropriately. I think she's been punished enough, and I would make a substitute motion that we take no action.
Okay. We have a substitute motion that we take no action and let the administrative action imposed by the Department of Corrections, APMP, serve as the punishment for this. Discussion on the motion? Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, a second by Sheriff Edmonds. Do we have to withdraw the original motion?
No.
No? Okay. All right. All in favor of the second motion made by Mr. Austin, say yes.
Yes.
It is a social experiment. I want to see if
it's not Robert.
That's right. And you all passed. Very good. All right. Any opposed? Say no. All right. The substitute motion passes.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Jared Hughes, a former member of the Sandy City Police Department. Sustained allegation is driving under the influence, which falls under Category D of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is 18-month suspension based on the high breath alcohol content. Summary of the facts are as follows. On July 24, 2014, Jared Hughes was stopped by a local police agency for improper lane travel. The officer suspected Hughes was impaired and had Hughes perform the standardized field sobriety test. Hughes showed several signs during the test, which indicated he was impaired and was subsequently arrested for driving under the influence. Hughes submitted to an intoxilizer test, which indicated he had a breath alcohol content of 0.211. On November 18, 2014, Jared Hughes waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Any questions? Is Mr. Hughes or a representative for Mr. Hughes here today? No. Okay, back to the council for a motion.
Move to accept.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Second.
Yes. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Motion passes.
Good. The next matter for the council is the certification of Zachary R. Hunt. He is a former member of the Department of Public Safety. Sustained allegation is falsifying information to obtain post certification, which falls under Category C of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a 2-year suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. In February of 2012, Zachary Hunt submitted an application to POST for dispatcher certification. Hunt failed to disclose in the application that on two occasions, in October 2010, Hunt, who was then age 17, performed oral sex on a male friend who was age 14. In January 2013, the male friend disclosed the sexual conduct as part of his therapy at a youth substance abuse rehabilitation center. A criminal investigation was conducted, and the case was ultimately adjudicated in juvenile court. In June 2013, the Department of Public Safety conducted an internal investigation to determine the sexual conduct was consensual. During a post-Garrity interview, it was discovered Hunt failed to disclose the sexual misconduct on his February 2012 post-application. On September 15, 2014, Mr. Hunt waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Okay, any questions, Mr. Yockey? Is Mr. Hunt or a representative of Mr. Hunt here today? No? Okay, bring it back to council for discussion or a motion. Thank you, Kyle.
Move to accept post recommendation.
Okay, we have a motion to accept by Sheriff Edmonds.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
The next matter for the council is the certification of Jed P. Imley.
He's a former member of the Cedar City Police Department. Sustained allegations are driving under the influence with a minor in the vehicle and leaving the scene of an accident, which falls under Category B of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a four-year suspension, and this is based on the nature of the offense and also the high
Mr.
breath
Mr. Yockey, one moment for a minute.
I apologize.
We do not have this case in our packet. Mr. Imlay?
It was on the
email, but it's not here.
One second.
So it's not in your packet.
Correct.
Right,
we'll do that. We'll move to the next case, Mark Pruitt, Mr. Yockey, and return to this one once the council has the information in the packet.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The next matter for the council is the certification of Mark D. Pruitt. He is a former member of the Utah Department of Corrections. Sustained allegation is criminal mischief, which falls under Category E of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a six-month suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. On April 17, 2012, Mark Pruitt and his friend treed a mountain lion using trained dogs. Pruitt waited with the mountain lion while his friend left to pick up another male who wanted to see the mountain lion. When Pruitt's friend returned with the male shot and tagged the mountain lion. According to Utah Administrative Rule, R-657-10-2, this action meets the definition of a canned hunt, which they have defined and which is illegal. A law enforcement agency learned about the incident a year later and opened an investigation. On October 18, 2013, Pruitt was charged with aiding and or assisting in the wanton destruction of protected wildlife. Pruitt later pled no contest to an amended charge of criminal mischief during a post-Garrity interview. Pruitt said that he was unaware that the male intended to kill the mountain lion. In the past, Pruitt's friend had brought others to see the mountain lion, and most took a picture and left. In addition, Pruitt thought the kill was legal because his friend had a valid hunting permit for the mountain lion. On November 19, 2014, Pruitt waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Yockey? Is Mr. Pruitt or Representative Mr. Pruitt here today? No? Okay. Back to council for discussion or and a motion. Sheriff?
Can we discuss this for a minute? I got to tell you, some of these wildlife violations to me are so nebulous. And so, I mean, it's one of the reasons I don't hunt anymore. I honestly don't know how we're supposed to decipher all of this. He goes and trees a cougar, as I understand it. And then somebody else shows up and shoots the animal, but had a tag for the cougar, correct?
Correct.
A legal tag for the cougar. How in the world is this employee supposed to know, or this gentleman supposed to know, that, I don't know. To me, it's very ambiguous. It's very nebulous. I don't know how anyone is supposed to decipher the wildlife code. Unless you've got the three-ring binder with you, I just don't know. I mean, we've heard so many of these over the years. I'm inclined to throw this one out is what I'm inclined to do. But,
well, and I have a question in that... As I read it, they were out training the dogs. They weren't actually hunting. So to me, that, you know, did they have firearms capable of, you know, killing the cougar as well, or did they just have the dogs? Because I agree with you, Sheriff, somewhat that, you know, this one to me is just, it would be hard to know that you were doing something wrong.
Could I clarify a little?
Sure.
In order to chase cougars, you have to have you get a pursuit tag from DWR. On that pursuit tag, it does specify what you can and can't do, and that if you are actively hunting, the hunter does need to be with the party.
Okay.
So that may clarify a little. And I'm sure they, if he's running dogs for and cougars or bears or whatever, I'm sure he had a pursuit tag. I mean, that's not an issue.
Okay.
So treating the cougar was not an issue.
Yeah, it's just the hunter wasn't with him, so they detained the cougar in the tree. Cougar won't jump out of a tree unless it has a way to escape. And so they detained it there until they got another person that did have a tag, is what I see.
Mr. Chairman,
and that's the violation.
This would be in my case.
I think you can give input, you just can't vote on the matter, okay. Director.
Then the input I would tell you is these folks that hunt cougars, and I'm a hunter myself, know exactly what those laws are in regards to any of these types of things because it's a little bit more rare. The other thing is that this person did not come forward until the police went to him and cited him for it. They were actually investigating a whole nother cougar issue. They went to him, and then he reported to us, but he was uncooperative with DNR the entire time. I was a little frustrated with the case, the way it was presented in this one. It's not anyone's fault, but I think there is, I can see why Sheriff Edmonds feels there's not enough information here. From my information, from what I know and what I dealt with in this particular case, a 6-month suspension is very fair based on what we know of this particular person's hunting experience and so on.
So you feel like he did have an understanding of what was going on here.
He did, it's not his first hunt, and it's not his first time treeing a cougar. It's an unfortunate common practice with some of them. That's what they were trying to uncover. Again, this was a sort of a bigger case, and this was a smaller piece of it that they discovered in that regard. So okay. I'd add that 2 cents to it.
Fair enough. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Sure.
Colonel?
So that brings into some questions. Did he really not know that he was waiting by the tree so some hunter could come and shoot the cat out of the tree? Or was he really thinking he was just sitting there to wait for a friend to come take a look at it?
Again, this would be based on his testimony,
his statements in the interview, that's his statement, is that he did not know. So whether or not that's true or not, I'm just stating that information. And the friend also corroborated that story. That is correct.
Mr. Chair, can I make one more comment? I think it's important to know that they had to go a long distance to get this friend to come shoot it. That cougar had been treed for an hour to 2 hours waiting for that person to come. So it wasn't like a nearby house. They kept that cougar treed for a long time.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Budd?
I was inclined to agree with Sheriff Edmonds when I read this case. It sounded like, how would you know? But after hearing Roland's discussion, I would move acceptance of the recommendation.
Well, and with what John said, obviously I've never pursued cougars, so not knowing that you need a permit just to do that, and the rules are clearly stated on that. That
houndsmen are still to pretty strict rules.
Okay.
Fishing game, you know exactly what houndsmen are where and what they're chasing.
Okay.
It's a common thing to have to be chasing.
And I also think it would take some time if a person shows up with a rifle, aims, picks, and shoots the cat out of the tree.
There's probably enough time to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, you're just here to take a picture. You're not here to shoot something. So that's why I would move acceptance of the recommendation.
Observation.
Oh, go ahead.
Whatever recommendation this council makes, just make sure you base it on the facts in the action. I know the discussion about the rules and the laws, the hunting laws was important, but just make sure it's based on the facts and the notice.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Sure.
Director Cook mentioned that he thought 6 months was appropriate.
I think the recommendation is two years,
isn't it? Or am I misunderstanding?
If I said appropriate, I apologize. To me, it's very lenient. But
okay, any more discussion? Is Mr. Pruitt a representative for Mr. Pruitt here? Nope. Okay, now we'll bring it back for a motion. I think we probably don't have any more discussion.
I think I made it twice.
So yeah.
I'll second it.
Okay. You were just checking to see if I was away. Okay, we're going to vote by saying yes on this one. All in favor of the six-month suspension, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Chairman, I didn't get who seconded that.
Mr. Connolly. Or Crowley, sorry. Connolly. Okay, we all have the Imlay case before us now. Shiraki, if you'd like to go back to Jed's case, we'll consider that now.
Okay, so the next matter is the certification of Jed P. Imlay. He is a former, as previously stated, he is a former member of the Cedar City Police Department. Sustained allegation is driving under the influence with a minor in the vehicle and leaving the scene of an accident, which falls under Category B of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is 4 years, and this is based on the high BRAC and also the nature of the offense. Summary of the facts are as follows. On June 2nd, 2014, Jed Imlay drove his Cedar City Police Department patrol vehicle to a local baseball park with his minor son in the vehicle. Imlay struck a retaining wall at the baseball park with his patrol vehicle before his son exited the vehicle. Witnesses observed Imlay get out of the patrol vehicle and exhibit behaviors of intoxication. Shortly after, Imlay struck the wall, got back into his patrol vehicle, and left the scene. The Cedar City Police Department was notified of the accident, and an investigation was conducted. Both the criminal and department administrative investigations later determined Imlay was under the influence of alcohol at the time of the accident. Imlay was later arrested for driving under the influence with a minor in the vehicle and leaving the scene of the accident. On October 28, 2014, Imlay pled guilty to DUI, a Class A misdemeanor, and the second charge was dismissed. Jed Imlay was sent a notice of agency action but failed to respond accordingly, and on November 6, 2014, an order of default was signed by the administrative law judge and mailed to Jed Imlay.
Okay, is Mr. Imlay here, a representative for Mr. Imlay? Okay, back to council for discussion and a motion.
Make a motion we accept the four-year suspension.
Thank you, Mr. Crowley. We have a second.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Austin. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Yeah, that brings us to our last case. Mr. Yonke.
Last matter before the post council is the certification of Robert R. Randell. He is a former member of the Twilla County Sheriff's Office and also the Salt Lake City Police Department. Sustained allegation is assault and lying under Garrity, which falls under Category A of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is revocation. A summary of the facts are as follows. On August 13, 2013, Robert Rundell was dispatched to a residential burglary. The suspect was arrested nearby by a second officer. Randell arrived at the suspect's location where the suspect was being questioned and searched. Randell engaged in a conversation with the suspect, which resulted in Randell striking the suspect in the face. Randell later told his supervisor he slapped the suspect for a little bit of remembrance. In Garrity interviews with the Salt Lake City Police Department and Post, Randell denied slapping the suspect. Instead, Randell explained when the suspect made a move towards his gun side, Randell checked him to the jawline to gain a little bit of compliance and control. On September 18, 2014, a hearing was held before an administrative law judge. The ALJ subsequently issued a finding of facts and conclusions of law stating Officer Robert Randell violated Utah Code Annotated 53-6-211 as outlined in the Notice of Agency Action.
Any questions for Mr. Yaki? Is Mr. Randell or Representative Mr. Randell here? Nope. Okay, bring back counsel for a discussion and a motion.
We don't teach the check and redirect slaps anywhere else, do we?
Not in years.
I'm not sure you come up with that, Ed.
They probably taught that in the academy when you went through.
Fair enough.
I think we carried saps and Kelvin flashlights back then, too. Okay, we have a motion by Sheriff Smith to accept.
I'll second.
And Mr. Austin seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Yockey.
Thank you.
Time's yours, Director.
I was waiting for the official approval. Thank you.
Okay. Well, in that case, why don't we just adjourn and go lunch?
Council, we have three members leaving this council and our profession. And I was talking to Chief Keefe how weird it is to be the young guy and then watching your mentors and these old salty dogs leave our profession. And even though, salty. Because I've learned so much. Yeah. Yes. Because I've learned so much from mentors and past friends, and it saddens me to see them leave. But I wanted to, on behalf of the post staff, and this council, I want to recognize these three individuals and let them know how much I appreciate their service. So if I could have Sheriff Lamont Smith come on up here.
Too solid.
Can somebody push him? We can do the wave. Get him up here. I appreciate the sheriff's service to the council. He's that quiet giant that you shake his hand and my hand just disappears. But very steady and very patient. I appreciate your service. And having worked through a few issues with Lamont, I appreciate his candor and his willingness to be compassionate, yet at the same time be very fair. So, in appreciation, we'll give him a old father clock to send him on his way. But enjoy retirement. But it was a pleasure to work with you.
Thank you.
Did you want to say anything? Nothing?
No.
All right. Here, do you want this bag so it doesn't get scratched up?
Oh, thank you. You're giving the clock, and he doesn't even need to know what time it is.
That's right. That's right. Just look at the fine craftsmanship. That's all you need to be concerned about. Sheriff Edmonds, this is my second farewell to this individual. The only thing I've been disappointed in Sheriff Edmonds is he doesn't speak often or enough. And but I appreciate his friendship and your service to this council. We've had several heated debates over issues, not just pertaining to our profession, but personal lives, and I consider him a good friend, and I hate to see him go. He is retiring. He's that still the word? And he will be dearly missed. But I wanted to give you this in appreciation for your service to our profession and the Post Council.
Thank you.
And good luck to you.
God bless. Appreciate it. Thank you for allowing me to serve. And I appreciate so many of you who have been patient with me. I'm a difficult personality. Just ask my wife. So thank you to all of you. God bless you for what you do, for protecting the sanctity of this profession that I love, and I know all of you do too. So God bless each one of you. Thanks.
Chief Keith. He gets two pieces of wood, one for being chair for the last 2 years, which he has done a very, very good job of keeping you guys in order. But I appreciate the relationship I have had with you, and it saddens me to go, but after 60 years of service, I think it's time, right? So on behalf of the Post staff, Post Council, thank you for your chairmanship. And a father clock to take with you, hopefully to use as firewood or whatever you desire.
Is it plastic?
I told you our budget's taking a huge hit. That's a wafer board. So,
thank you. Scott. Like Lamont and Dave, I'm going to take the battery out of the back of it, Commissioner, so I don't need it to tell time anymore. I just want to express my appreciation to Director Stevenson and the staff of Post for the hard work that they do, for the members of the Attorney General's office that we have assigned here that help us wade through these issues and keep us in track so that we protect the rights of the officers that we're making difficult decisions on while still protecting the rights of the citizens that we're all sworn to uphold and protect. It has changed. I joked with Sheriff Tracy about what was taught in the academy when he and I started as Sheriff Smith. We're probably the more tenured guys in the office or in the room right now. Long time ago, it's changed a lot, and the Post Council has changed over the years. And this is just a critical function that we have to make sure that we maintain the integrity of our profession and the transparency as much as we can, balancing that with the constitutional rights that law enforcement officers also have. We're no different than any other citizen of this country. We have rights as well, and this council has to balance those, and I think we try to do the best we can, and I think that we've done a good job over the years. So thank you for all of you that allowed me to participate in this process, and it's going to be exciting and scary doing this for almost 41 years, and so walking out the door is going to be a little different, but I've promised Chief Keefe down in Washington City, where I will soon be residing, that I'm going to be coming to the city council meeting complaining that I never see a cop in my neighborhood. So anyway, thank you all.
Real quick, I just want to express my appreciation to the council. You guys have a difficult job, and I value those checks and balances from our staff to defense attorneys to this council. It's a difficult position to be in, and you don't have to be here. And I want you to know that your efforts do not go unnoticed. A lot of these cases are very difficult, and most of us have some biases one way or another about a given case, but I appreciate you guys being impartial and at the same time showing compassion on officers that come before this group. There is a fine balance to be made to preserve that individual and at the same time maintain the integrity of this profession. Our profession has taken a lot of hits this year, and it's very frustrating, but at the same time, we kind of do it to ourselves. And so this body is very, very valuable within our law enforcement community. So I appreciate the checks and balances. I appreciate you guys keeping me in check. And please feel free to give me any kind of advice and consent as per statute, because I definitely welcome it. So thank you and have a great holiday season. And I'll turn the time back over to the chair for a date.
Thank you, Director. Okay, at this time, it's time to elect a new chair and vice chair. So we'll open it up to nominations from the floor.
Also, each of them should have a ballot, so after the nominations, you can write and just fold it in half and we'll flip it over.
All right, great. So, Lamont and I are not going to stay if you remain silent, so. Director Clifton, I'm sorry.
He doesn't know what's coming, but I nominate Sheriff Tracy as our chair.
Well deserved.
It's going to be a busy year, but I would accept that nomination.
Great.
Did you get a second?
Sure. Take a second. We'd even probably take a motion to close nominations, but
I'll make that motion.
Thank you.
Second that motion.
Thank you. Okay. Now we need vice chair.
I would nominate Wade Carpenter.
Oh, I thought you were going to volunteer.
I'll do it.
Okay, we have Chief Stratton's nominating Chief Carpenter from Park City.
Second.
We have a second to that.
Who seconded that?
I did.
So do we have any other nominations?
The nominations be closed.
Okay, the train is coming down the track. Yeah. So, all in favor of the two nominations, Sheriff Tracy for chair and Chief Carpenter for vice chair, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Great, motion carries. Next is our next meeting.
Next meeting.
January. No, March. Sorry. March. Yeah. March. My next meeting's in January.
That's right.
And it'll be at the, I assume, at the Chief's Conference in St. George.
Yes, if you guys would like to keep it down there.
Sure. Okay. I don't think we need to vote since it was everybody approved.
Right, yeah.
We only had the one.
Is it the last week of March? March or March 23rd, that week?
Yes, yeah, let's see here. We're
past.
I guess it would be on, what is 26th?
We want to do it after the round table. Is that better for everyone? Thursday afternoon?
Roundtable will be on the morning of the 26th.
Okay, so 1 o'clock on the 26th?
That would work.
Okay, March 26th, 1300 hours, and
TBA.
Location to determine.
That brings us to the end of the agenda, so a motion to adjourn, and lunch is being provided by post, so thank you all. Everybody have a Merry Christmas.
We have lunch for those that want to indulge.
Congratulations. Thanks for being
patient. This is Terry Keefe. I'd like to welcome everybody in attendance, both in person and telephonically, at this meeting of the Post Council. We're meeting today to vacate some letters that were sent out that erroneously had the incorrect date on them. This time I'll turn the time over to Director Stevens to further explain. Then we'll need to take action via a vote of the council.
Okay. Director? I apologize for the inconvenience. The reason why we're having this emergency meeting is due to the fact that we put the wrong date, which precluded the respondents from responding or standing before the council and delivering whatever message they desired. So per our rule, and to stay within the due process protection of the officer, we need to vacate these three cases and then hear them again in March. So what the chair is going to do, we're just going to throw out the cases. In fact, Marcus, if you need to step in and explain more, please do. Do you have anything to say?
Yeah, really quickly, we would probably need a vote and approve this emergency meeting.
Okay.
You mean to have the meeting?
Yeah.
All right.
Correct. You need to vote to approve this meeting since we're using the emergency meeting provision of the open and book.
All right.
For those of you on the phone, please say your name and then yay or nay.
Okay.
Bruce Bailey, yay.
Leo Lucy, yay.
Who was that?
Dave Edmonds, yay.
Matt Checkett, yay.
Okay, we got Matt Checkett. Who was the other one?
Mike McKay, yay.
London Stromberg, yay.
Terry Gibson, hi.
Wade Carpenter, yay.
Frank Budd, yay.
Terry Keefe, yay. Does anyone opposed to this meeting? Then I guess the meeting's been approved.
Okay. Anything else, Marcus?
Now that that's approved, now we can move on with any of the agenda items on the agenda.
Marcus, could we approve all three rescinding letters and approve new letters at the same time, or do we have to handle each as a separate issue?
This is Kevin Bolander. I think you could approve all three at once, although I would mention each officer specifically by name. But you should be good.
All right.
Zachary.
Yeah, what the motion would look like is you would move to vacate the order for the three officers and then hear the matter at the next regularly scheduled hearing.
Okay. We're getting the three names now.
Zachary Hunt, Justin Curtis, and Robert Randell.
Okay, anybody willing to make a motion?
I move to vacate and postpone to the next meeting.
Okay, and who was this?
Bruce Bailey.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey. Okay, any discussion on the motion? Do we have a second?
No second.
Seconded by Chief Carpenter. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Do we need to identify each aye vote by name? Okay,
yes.
We'll need each of us to identify ourselves as we cast our vote. So those on the phone, if you'd like to go first.
Bruce Bailey,
Check it.
How about we say their name and then they respond?
Yeah.
Let's do a roll call.
We'll do a roll call.
Dave Edmonds.
Aye.
Terry Keefe.
Aye.
Frank Budd.
Aye.
Wade Carpenter.
Aye.
Matt Checkitz.
Aye.
London Stromberg.
Aye.
Bruce Bailey.
Aye.
Mike McKay.
Aye.
Theo Lucy.
Aye.
Kerry Gibson.
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. Do members of the council have any other business they'd like to bring forward today?
Nope. Hey, this is Kevin again. Marcus and I can help draft the language for those orders to go out, and so we'll take care of that.
Thank you, Kevin. Director, do you have anything else?
Nope. Again, I apologize for the mishap, and thank you for your time.
Okay, we need a motion to adjourn.
Who's just joined us?
Christy Morin.
Okay, day late and a dollar short, Christy. We just finished the meeting.
Well, all right.
Thank you for calling, though. We appreciate it.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
Okay, Chief Carpenter's made a motion to adjourn. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Do we need a roll call on that motion to adjourn?
I don't think so.
Okay, all in favor, say aye.
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 We're adjourned. Thank you, everybody.